This is Focus 580. It's the second hour of the program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft, is at the controls. Today, anyone, just about anybody, with a computer, and if you have a good connection to the internet, it is possible for you to access an enormous amount of information. With the contents of the world's great libraries accessible now virtually with the click of a mouse, the question we'll look at this morning, and it's not really a new one, the question is, do we still need the library, the physical building? Do we still need that place that keeps the books where people can go? Do we, in fact, still need the books on paper? Will people still want them when they can get just about anything in electronic form? This morning, in this hour, we will take a look at some of the many ways that libraries and books are changing, perhaps will continue to change as we move further and further into the digital age. And our guest for the program is Paula Kaufman. She is university librarian here at the University of Illinois and has been since the fall of 1999. Before that, she was dean of the libraries at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville for 11 years. And before that, she served at the Columbia University Libraries in a number of positions. Questions here are certainly welcome as we continue to talk. All we ask of people who call in is that they try to be brief so that we can keep our program moving and get in as many different people as possible. But, of course, anyone's welcome to call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Thanks for being here very much.
It's my pleasure.
We were chatting just before we got going, and I think that almost as soon as the internet got going and people began to understand what you could do, and we all got used to the idea that through our computers, if we're fortunate enough to have a good machine and have a good connection, that we could tap into a vast, vast array of sources of information. And increasingly it becomes available that you can tap into the collections of some of the world's great libraries. So then people right away start asking the question, well, what does this really mean for the library as a place? What does it mean for the way that we think about books? Does it mean the end of both of those things? And it seems to me that it's still something of an open question, but probably the library is not going to go away and books are not going to go away. So to start out, let me ask you the question about how it is that as we've moved more and more into this digital era, that the way that you do things at your library, which is obviously a major research library and a little bit different in some ways from the community libraries that we have, how has it changed what you do?
Well, that's certainly a big question, David. and I'll try to take a crack at some of it, and hopefully our listeners will call in and guide me along various paths. In many ways, we do what we've always done. We make information available to people, and we do that by selecting, purchasing, and licensing materials, by making sure that it is intellectually accessible, that is, you can find it through searching catalogs or databases, and that people learn how to use and find the information that they're looking for. Because as all of this information is swirling around us, it becomes more and more difficult to hone in on what it is that you really want to find. And it's not as intuitive as it seems when you pull up that Google screen with its one search box and you put in your search terms and get back 50,000 items. So we do a lot to help people find their way through that information maze.
Well, something that I'm sure will comfort people, certainly people who love books and who love libraries and people who work in them, is that it seems that the library is not going to go away, that people are always going to want to have that place to go, to have physical contact with the material, and to see other people, to have a place to hang out where people are reading and talking, and the human contact is still going to be important. So no matter what you can get through your computer, it sounds like people are still going to want to have the library that they can go to.
Well, I certainly think so, and our students and faculty certainly think so. In this age of easy access, as you've described it, we have more and more students using the library than ever before. Our undergraduate library is packed until 3 in the morning, as is our Granger Library. And our statistics show that we have increasing physical use of the library as we have increasing virtual use of the resources that we make available. it's really important that the library as place remain an important place, not only on this campus, but libraries in general. And as you indicated, they're places where people come to study, to socialize, to interact as a community of scholars, and to browse the shelves. No matter what we say about the easy access of digital materials, and yes, it is easy access, there is something to the technique of serendipitous browsing, walking those shelves, getting ideas from things that you see that are totally not unconnected to what it is you started out looking for. That just can't be matched.
Yeah.
Maybe someday it will be, but right now, with not so much in digital form compared to what's in printed form available, we can't replicate that.
Yeah, and all that also still applies and probably will continue to apply to the community public library as well. It seems now our communities here, we have libraries that are very heavily, the rate of library use in Champaign-Urbana is really high.
Yes, it is.
And we have two very fine libraries. We're lucky to have them. And it seems that there is some of the same things apply. People want to be able to go to the library. They want to go down there and they'd like to be able to sit there and read books, meet their friends, browse the collection, have a cup of coffee, you know, whatever. And that seems likely not to change either.
I agree. I should disclose that I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of the Champaign Public Library, and certainly our statistics, our circulation statistics and our use statistics are up enormously. People want to read, and they still want to read, particularly recreational reading. People want to read books that are traditionally printed on paper.
Hmm. And for that I guess, invites that question about what's going to happen to the book. There is increasing attention to the subject of electronic publishing, and the idea that there would be books that could be available for screen reading, maybe would only be available for screen reading, or books that are available that way, and then maybe a copy doesn't exist until someone decides he or she wants one. That also invites these questions about, well, what happens to books? Are we really looking at a day someday when most people will do most of their reading off some kind of a screen and there won't be this thing with all these pieces of paper that are all bound up together that we have all grown up with and that we actually like an awful lot?
Well, I think you've asked at least two questions.
Oh, that's one of my failings.
Yeah. Well, one relates mostly to, and I want to address it in those two parts. One relates to recreational reading, and the other to accessing printed materials for one's scholarly research. And those really are two different things. I can't foresee the day when the recreational reading book, as we traditionally know it, is going to go away. Certainly, we don't have reading devices that in any way replicate or make easy the reading of an electronic book. Now, hardware and software vendors keep promising us that fabulous device is right around the corner. But I haven't seen it, and it's hard for me to believe that we're all going to go out and invest in $500 or $600 devices so that we can carry them with us on a book or an airplane when we can take, in fact, what I think is better technology, the printed paperback or the printed hardback book.
Yeah.
But for scholarly purposes, when one is doing research, the ability to have access to a vast array of material, some related, perhaps some unrelated, is really unmatched in the printed world. I think back to the days when we dreamt of having all the books in the Library of Congress at our fingertips somehow. I mean, the dream, which certainly predates my lifetime, wasn't very specific, but there was that vision. And then microform technologies came along, and with it the expectation that we could then have the contents of the Library of Congress available to us on microform, but that proved to be a technology that had many barriers to good use and still does. There are good uses for it, but one doesn't sit in front of a microform reader for very long. Nor can you do anything except look page by page for the materials. But when you have materials in digital form, you're able to search across those materials. You're able to use software that analyzes trends that you may be looking for, that presents them to you in visual ways, that allows you to look at materials that are very different from one another in format. So you can have texts and images and multimedia materials all together in ways that you can't when you're just looking at printed materials.
Mm-hmm.
We have really cut back on the numbers of printed journals that we're subscribing to these days because there are many, many advantages to the electronic, the digital versions. However, until we know that we can have perpetual access to these materials, and we don't yet quite know that. We're almost there, but we don't know that yet. Having printed materials is still important. Having them somewhere is still important.
We have a caller here to talk with. Let's do that. Someone listening over in Indiana, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. Well, the question I was going to ask, she has certainly answered most of it, so I'll just put a here to it. First, let me do a footnote. I remember a while back they said, you know, get ready, the electronic books are coming your way. Well, I sat down at the computer and read a sample of one of those books, and basically, my back got sore and my butt got sore, and I got up and never returned to the computer for that kind of reading. Then I went back to the Gala Days in graduate school where I could go outside under a tree if I wanted to, or move over to a creek, or, you know, if I hadn't necessary, get in my car and drive someplace. So I think that physical thing in the hand is an important aesthetic thing, part of the human culture. And I just hope it doesn't go away in my time, let's put it that way. But until they come up with something similar size to a book and the font size and that you can flip back and forth at will, I'm going to stick with the good old black and white paperback or whatever. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I comment
a little bit on that? Yeah.
Because he really raises an interesting issue, and that is a generational issue. David, you and I are probably pretty much the same. I think I'm older than you are, but we're pretty much of the generation that grew up with books. But our young people are growing up in this digital. They didn't remember a time when the internet didn't exist. And they use computers. They play their games. Their entertainment is not only on a computer, but it's pretty worldwide. I mean, many young people are playing games over the internet with people from all over the world. So I think their orientation towards a different kind of technology is very much different than ours. And it wouldn't surprise me that in 15 or 20 years, as those people age and as they become our students and then go out into the working world, have different expectations and different needs for the ways in which they read their recreational reading.
I guess that was my thought, too, that if you grew up getting a lot of your information off of some kind of a screen,
that maybe
the idea of reading a book for pleasure, you know, reading your novel off of a screen, maybe you'd say, well, that's okay. I have no problem with that, particularly if there's still a hardware issue.
You still have the hardware issue.
It's not, you know, it's not very appealing to me, the idea of reading a book like that off of a screen. But, you know, who knows if you could make a device that would be a little bit more user-friendly. And if you had, you were used to that, if you had grown up that way, maybe that's just fine with you. Maybe you say, sure, yeah, give me my novels on some kind of handheld device. I'll read it that way. That's fine. I got no problem with it.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk with someone in Belgium nearby, line 1. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't catch Mr. Inge's introduction, so I don't know if this will be within your expertise, but a fellow and I were standing around working, and we got into a bit of a discussion, and he said every book that's printed, I guess maybe in the United States, is in the Library of Congress. And I said, oh, surely not. Are they?
Yes, actually they are.
Every book?
The Library of Congress, by law, receives 2 copies of every item that's copyrighted.
Oh, copyright. So there could be certain things that wouldn't make it into it, but...
That's true, yes. I mean, I think you're right that not... I think if push comes to shove, they probably don't have every single item, but they come pretty close.
They got a lot of them, huh?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Must be an awful big place. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Paula Kaufman. She is the university librarian at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. She is also professor of library science. And we're talking about libraries and books in the digital age, and questions, comments certainly are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. One of the things that we've talked about is, particularly for a library like yours, how things have changed and how they have not. And certainly, I think one of the things that we can expect is that both for big research libraries and probably also for community public libraries, in fact, rather than going away, people are going to expect more. They're going to expect more services. They're going to expect more different kinds of materials. They're going to expect you to have everything, certainly the thing that they want. And I'm sure that this actually puts a burden on all libraries, if only for financial reasons and if not for others, of staffing and storage space and everything, because people actually expect you to have more and more stuff now.
Yes, they do. But let's call it a challenge rather than a burden. And perhaps opportunity as well. Certainly the expectations and the demands of today's library users are different than they used to be. People expect to have access to everything 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no matter where they are. And that's not always possible. They also expect and receive from us the expertise of our librarians and our library staff. These are people who have subject expertise, functional skill expertise, who can help people with technical issues, with subject issues, who help organize the information that we have access to and help you actually find it and then help you use it and repurpose it in other ways. So I think the needs and expectations are rising. Now, we do have an interesting set of challenges that arise with the expectations that projects like Google's digitization of the holdings of Michigan and Stanford and the new efforts of the Open Content Alliance are providing. We now have expectations that we'll be able to access any of those materials, but copyright laws get in our way. Materials published after 1923 are not in the public domain unless they're published by a government or unless their author puts them in the public domain. So unless we pay for access, which we certainly cannot afford to do, as you mentioned, a lot of these materials will in fact not be available digitally as people want them. And that will put a lot of burden on libraries and universities to provide the financial resources and other capabilities to make these materials available.
What sort of things would you like to be able to do, or do you think you really should be able to do that you can't do now?
Oh, many things. Well, actually, I would start with something that's really non-digital, non-electronic. I would like us to be able to protect and preserve the materials in which we've invested since we began in 1868. Many of our materials are printed on highly acidic paper and need to be in environments that at the moment we can't afford to put them in. Mm-hmm. So that presents us with a huge challenge. And in many ways, these projects to digitize those materials will help to preserve them. They will not preserve the artifactual piece, but they will help to preserve the contents of those materials, which are really at risk.
When in early days, when people were talking about digitizing things and having that as a way of storing, preserving, and giving access, mm-hmm. I think one of the questions that people asked was, well, we probably won't be able to digitize everything. So that means someone is going to have to be making some decisions about what we save and what we don't. Mm-hmm. Now, assuming that that's right, that we can't digitize everything and that someone is going to have to decide, how do you do that? And do we worry that something eventually will be lost because of the decision was made that it wasn't worth preserving?
Yes, we probably will lose things, But I think we need to remember that we've not collected everything either, certainly not here. I also am not sure that your assumption that everything won't be digitized is truly accurate. I think Google's technologies and the Open Content Alliance's technologies are showing us that we have within our reach over the next couple of decades the capability to digitize almost everything. Whether we'll want to do that or not is another story. Mm-hmm. I think that's another question to be asked. And there are some reasons not to digitize some materials. Some materials may be too fragile to digitize, or there may be other reasons that I can't think of off the top of my head. But I think we have to recognize that there are reasons not to digitize some things. But I think we will have the capability to digitize them. Then comes the question of what do we continue to keep in printed form and how do we protect that? And here at the U of I, we feel very strongly about our print archive and its importance to scholarship for future generations. And we anticipate being one of a relatively small number of components of what will end up being a national federation of print archives.
Mm-hmm. Well, that perhaps also, again, gets back to this question of what it, if you get to the point where you have terminals where you can access the Library of Congress. So that means essentially that you have access in a digital form to almost everything that's published. Then how do you think of – and then you've said, but you also think that it's possible – that it's important that you still have the physical stuff. You have the journals in print and paper form. You have books so that people can actually hold them and use them and read them that way. If you can get to the everything on a computer, then how do you think about what of all of that you feel that you need to have in physical form? Or if not you, then a neighbor library where you can say, can I have that book, please? Can you send it over here?
Yeah, and you've just hit on one of the strategies that we would use in making these decisions. Certainly, we would work with faculty on campus to make sure that what's important to this university stays at this university. And we need to look forward as we do that, which means that our library faculty need to be very much involved in guiding these discussions. Because often librarians have a good feel for what will be needed in the future, as do teaching faculty. But we also do work very closely with other libraries, particularly in the Big Ten. We're part of that consortium. We work closely with other academic libraries in the state. And we certainly work closely with other libraries, both in this country and around the world. And it's important to remember that the publishing industries and the state of libraries in other countries is quite different from ours. And we need to ensure that materials are available from around the world. And so we work collaboratively in consortia and other structural organizations to make sure that we're keeping the resources that we need to keep.
We are at our midpoint here, and we're certainly open to questions, comments. Our guest for this hour, Focus 580, is Paula Kaufman. She is the university librarian at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign, has been since September of 1999. Before that, she was dean of the libraries at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and before that, she had a number of posts at the Columbia University Libraries. And we're talking about libraries and how things have changed and maybe will continue to change as we become more and more digitized. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I'm interested in your thoughts if you can put yourself in the perspective of the author about what it means if we do something like Google is talking about, where these are the search engine people, and they have proposed to scan the collections of a number of very large libraries and then make them available digitally. And I think that there is concern among the publishing community, certainly among writers, about what happens if that happens, and perhaps that happens even more and more, and that greater numbers of people then access books that way. Right now, at least libraries will buy a certain number of copies of books, and you know, maybe the library will have a couple of copies and some people will come and read them. If we get to the point where we heavily digitize everything and we use that as a way of accessing the books, then I think the worry is that actually maybe more and more people will be reading the books, but fewer and fewer of the actual books will end up being sold, and writers will be read, but they're not going to get rewarded for their work. Now, you touched on the fact that maybe the way that you get at that is to charge some kind of, for the library to have access to it, you have to charge something. Somebody's got to pay somewhere. So if it's not the patron who pays, then maybe it's the library who pays, and that's the way we get at the issue. But does that, are you concerned on behalf of writers that this means that writers are not going to be rewarded for their work?
I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding about what it is that the Google Digitization Project is doing and what its impacts are going to be. Mm-hmm. While Google is digitizing the contents the books held by the University of Michigan and Stanford University, they're not making them all available. They've indexed them so they can be searched, but they're only when you get a search, a hit, you only get a snippet, which is what they call it, a snippet from the book. You don't have access to the book. You can't get access to the book without buying the book. Some authors and some publishers, and certainly the AAP, look at this as a threat to their income. John Updike, most famously, most recently, has been very outspoken about how his world will end. And it's probably true that the ways in which authors and publishers make money will change, but I think that their opportunities actually will expand rather than contract. Because when you pull up a reference from Google, you know, Google surrounds it with ads, and there'll be ads for where you can buy that book. When I talked about some of the barriers to success of the digitizing everything, I mentioned copyright. And the copyright laws pertain, and I don't know librarians who want to violate copyright laws. We may have different interpretations of them than authors and publishers do. But we certainly don't want to violate them. We need publishers. We need authors to write books, and we need publishers to publish books. Libraries, for the most part, are not publishers. I certainly don't want us to get into the business of being a publisher. We also have authors. We have to, I think, stratify our authors as well. I think authors like John Updike, who make their living writing books that are sold, trade books that are sold to the public as well as to libraries, are in one category. But certainly here at the university, most of our faculty members write articles and books so that their knowledge is disseminated. And many of them are strong proponents of open access, of making their materials available to people without having them have to subscribe to the journal or pay for the journal. And there are new models emerging that support the ways in which some of that can be carried out. Because the bottom line is, it costs money to publish books. It costs money for libraries to maintain those books. And all of that has to be sustained in order for these materials to be made available.
Let's talk with someone else here in Champaign. No, I guess they changed their mind. Well, if people have questions, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We did have another question. The person asked their question off the air, and that has to do with the privacy issue, mm-hmm. Something which has been much discussed now, particularly over the last few years. This is not particularly a new question, but that is as it becomes increasingly possible to access wide variety of information digitally this way, that also may indeed make it even more convenient for someone, if they wanted to know what you were looking at, to find out. Or, they might take the avenue has been taken, and that is actually to go to the library and say to the librarian, we would like to know, this guy David Inge here, we'd like to know what books this guy has been looking at. And of course, librarians have been very strong in saying, no, we're not going to do that. But if indeed more and more people are accessing it electronically. It seems that that opens the door, at least, for that possibility that then someone is going to be looking over your shoulder and seeing what sorts of materials you're looking at.
Yes, and this is a very important and very serious issue, and one which I and other librarians wrestle with constantly. And you've probably seen recent news reports of the situation in Connecticut, where several members of the board of a library consortium that runs a confederated catalog, a union catalog, for many public libraries, were asked to provide information, and they were asked under provisions of the Patriot Act in such a way that they were not allowed to even talk about the fact that they had been asked. And the ACLU came to their defense, and the FBI, Justice Department, has decided not to sue. But this is of great concern. It has been for many years. I was personally involved in an incident in the late 80s at Columbia University in which the FBI was asking us to follow people in certain subject areas, and these people had to fit certain criteria, and we were to report on what it was that they were reading. We refused, and I blew the whistle on the program, and it was ostensibly stopped. But clearly, you know, we always have these issues, and now that we're in a time of war, the national security issues become important as well. And so the balance between national security and privacy are always difficult ones. But privacy is part of our fundamental rights and something that we librarians feel very strongly needs to be protected. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is something that you worry about. I think about how maybe early on as I was starting to explore the internet, someone said, you know, you have to keep in mind that, or think about it this way. Think about the fact that no matter what you're doing, somebody somewhere is watching what you're doing. Now, that may be just a little bit paranoid, but then, and that would be a case where you wouldn't have to go to the librarian to say, you know, I want you to show me what a person has been looking at. If they're using a computer to get at the material, it seems to me that means that there's some way that somebody, without even you knowing, might be able to know what it is that some of your patrons are doing. I mean, does that raise the issue of security and privacy to a new level?
Yes, I think it certainly does. And I think one is probably more vulnerable if you use a commercial internet service provider than you might be here at the university. But that vulnerability exists. I mean, certainly with the latest horrible incidents of the VA losing all of the private information of veterans and current service people, we see security breaches all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think we do have to worry about that in everything that we do.
Well, we have several callers here to talk with. Let's do that. We'll bring them into the conversation, and we'll
Good.
Start with Champagne in line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I am senior, and I want to know, I do not use computer. So what does digitize mean?
Oh, it means taking the contents of a book, the print on the page, and putting it into an electronic form so that you can read it on your computer. And it can be searched by various techniques that a number of companies make available. Does that help explain it?
All right. I hope so. I think, well, I actually appreciate the fact that the caller asked the question, because I think often we take for granted that people know, we use terms, we talk about things, we take for granted that people
right.
know what it is we're talking about, and they don't always. So that is, in fact, what we're talking about.
Yes, and thank you very much.
All right, let's go to Urbana. This would be line number two. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have some concerns about books that are not available at this point on audio tapes or audio CDs. Some of these books I would you might put in the category of scholarly works. And I am starting to have some vision problems, so I'm starting to rely on that medium. And I was wondering what's in the works for getting more information, more books out there for people with vision problems. And so if you could tell me tell me about that. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I hope our caller is familiar with the national program that makes books available on tape to people with visual problems. The Illinois State Library runs the program here in the state, and their library is in Springfield, but they mail tapes and I suppose CDs these days of books. And I believe that WILL is part of the Radio Reader program, which makes current materials available over the radio.
Mm-hmm. You have to have it's a broadcast on a special frequency. You have to have a special kind of radio, but yes.
Yes, but indeed. I would certainly suggest that our listener and others contact the Illinois State Library for the Blind in Springfield, and I think you'll find a world of materials and other services available.
Now, would that also include not just popular trade books, but would that also include scholarly books that people might, for example, the kinds of things that would be in some of your collections that would be perhaps of a very specialized interest that would be only the kinds of things that certain number of people in certain fields would be interested mm-hmm. in reading?
I have to be honest and say I really don't know what their holdings are, but many years ago I was a volunteer at Recordings for the Blind. This was in New York City, and we would take requests for books to be put onto tape, and I recorded several scholarly books, so I assume that there are a variety of services available that would make these materials accessible.
All right. To someone here on a cell phone in Urbana, this is line number 3. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes.
One site that I've really enjoyed is Project Gutenberg.
Oh, yes.
And, a lot of the information there, of course, is digitized. And one of the things that I found really quite remarkable is you can take a $30 program and turn it into an audiobook. I mean, the voice is a bit tinny, but there's a lot of material there. And for people who are having vision problems or for people who don't have time to read and like to listen to things, I think it's very exciting.
Well, that's
a development that we can actually create our own content.
That's very interesting. Perhaps you could share the name of your software program?
They call it's one of many. I think it's like Sepstroller or something like that. But if you put something into your browser, you'll find that there are all kinds of programs out there that will do a translation, and they're incredibly, incredibly inexpensive, so long as you have a powerful enough up-to-date computer
mm-hmm.
that will do the translation.
Well, that's fair.
I think a lot of character recognition programs also come with built-in software like that as well. I think it's an exciting development, with the computer technology that's out there. It is bringing the ability to create your own content and not necessarily rely on what's available that's been produced by other people.
Well, thank you. That's a very good suggestion, and you've also brought up a project that I should have mentioned, which is Project Gutenberg, which is located here in Urbana. Michael Hart started that project, I can't remember if it's 25 or 30 years ago now, started by having people typing in text of books that are in the public domain. So these are non-copyrighted books. And together with eWorld Library, Project Gutenberg is making, I think it's 300,000 electronic books available for free in the next month or so. I can't remember all the details, but I'm sure someone will call in and tell us about it.
Well, I know that they have a website. So if you have internet access, if you just type in Project Gutenberg, I know that you can go to their website, and so you can get more information about it. You can see the listings of the things that they have, and you can try it out.
That's right.
All right. Well, again, I thank the caller. Other questions and comments are certainly welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have maybe about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and our guest is Paula Kaufman. She is university librarian here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Do you? I just wonder whether what you think about – we talked earlier about electronic books and about – are, being as we grew up before the internet, we're sort of attached to books, and that people still say things like, well, you know, I don't want to read a book on my computer, opening up the possibility that with a good device, there are maybe be some people and maybe young ones who grew up in screen cultures would say, oh, I got no problem with that. I guess I am interested in though, what your thoughts are about the future of e-books, about electronic books, and either things just, you know, what anybody thinks about things, whether they exist in that form or not, or as I said earlier, now that there are some books that exist on an on-demand basis, the text is stored someplace, and the way you get the book is that you go to the publisher or whoever does it and said, well, print me one of these, and then you get one.
That's right. You can actually go to Amazon, and some of their books are print-on-demand books. Some of their books are download books only. So they're offering an interesting service. If I had to speculate, I would say that probably within the next decade, we'll see an upsurge in electronic books. We'll see devices developed that are good devices for reading. There are also some development in electronic paper, where the paper will change, you know, the ink changes on your electronic paper to form different pages as you do something to it. I'm not quite sure what. But nonetheless, I think that we're just really at the dawn of the popular electronic book, and I can't see that there's anything but clear sailing ahead. There have been bumps in the road. But we're now seeing publishers like Harcourt Brace beginning to reinvest in electronic books, and they must know something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I read this in a talk that you gave, the suggestion that some people think, though, that in fact, because so much information is going to be available electronically, that might then actually mean that books would become very special things, and that there might actually be a premium to having a real book, particularly, I'm sure, if it's one that is beautifully made and is just a wonderful thing as a physical object above and beyond the text that's in the book.
Oh, absolutely. There is today a market for beautiful small press books with short runs, limited editions. People invest in those now, I suppose some people invest in them as investments, but mostly because they're beautiful objects to have. And I imagine that piece of the market will continue to flourish.
Let's talk with someone here in Urbana on line number one.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. This is in some way a continuation.
It would help us if you turn your radio down.
I thought I had, but just a minute. Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks.
This is in some way a continuation of the topic that was just brought up now. What I'm a little concerned about is what is going to happen to the vast number of books that are now in circulation or have in some way been preserved as we go forward, because it seems to me that what happens when you digitize, at least as it occurs now, you lose the material book. And when you lose the material book, you do lose something that contributes to its meaning. That is to say, the kind of paper, for instance, the way in which it is printed, the very print itself, the nature of the binding. And I'm talking now not about just the beautiful book, but also the very casual book, even the ephemera. And all of that, the material book, does say something about content. It's not divorced from content, I think. And I'm thinking particularly, actually, as far as our library is concerned, about the vast number of 19th and late 18th century material that we have that unfortunately is in danger of being lost simply because we don't have climate control in the stacks yet. And this seems to me to be perhaps not so much a concern now because we still are preserving books, but in the future, if one wants to go back, say 100 years from now, one wants to go back to the 18th and 19th centuries, and even the early, even the 20th century, and you don't have the material books, you are going to lose something, and it's not just the pleasure of having a book in one's hand. And,
well,
and I'll hang up.
I expect that our guest will agree with you in all points there.
Oh, I absolutely do. And so do my colleagues here at the University of Illinois. We really are committed to keeping our print collection. We have absolutely no intention of ridding ourselves or divesting ourselves of those wonderful 18th, 19th, and 20th century books that you talked about. There really is something special about a book and its container, to use a really mundane word. And I think we will be one of the few places in this country, say 50 years from now, that will still have a large collection of printed materials. And I think that will make us even more special, and we'll see as many scholars who come here now to use our books, because there's no other way to get access to the content, coming to see and use the printed collection.
Well, as you say, and I think probably it is true that large research libraries like this one will continue as institutions. We're not going to throw away our books. And I'm sure that there are other places where they're also not going to throw away their books either. But is there some danger that perhaps some smaller places will say, you know, for a variety of reasons, we don't need them. It's a storage problem. Maybe, in fact, that we're not going to keep them. And now that may indeed make a place like this more important than it is now, because there will be fewer copies. But will there be inevitably, you think, some loss of the physical objects?
I think that's inevitable. And I do think that you're right, that there are smaller libraries that will at some come to the conclusion that they can't keep everything that they've had. It's hard for me to envision any academic library, certainly, with no books at all. That's really hard to imagine, especially if they're serving a population that does research that's not bounded by the United States, where materials are needed from abroad. But I do think that they will be downsizing their collections significantly over the next 20 to 25 years.
Yeah. Well, I suppose public libraries have always done that. They've had to call because people really – the demand is for newer things, and they only have so much shelf space. So periodically they have to go through and then getting rid of the old books.
That's right. But their mission is primarily to provide that kind of reading, whereas the mission of academic libraries is to support the research that their faculty and students do. And each of us will choose different ways to provide that support.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll start looking more and more different from one another than we now look alike.
Anything else? Back in probably the first half, I asked a question sort of like, well, what is it that you would like to be able to do that you can't now? And you said, well, actually, there are a lot of that might be kind of a long list, long things. But again, as you think of specifically how the institution like yours, a large major university research library, will continue to change, what other sorts of things are there, you think, important, and perhaps other important things that you say in that right now you'd like to be able to do, or you would hope within 5 and 10 years?
Right. And well, one of the major things that we really would like to do is to transform some of those library spaces that you and I were talking about earlier on. Many of our spaces were designed for early to mid-20th century readers. And the way in which our students and faculty use library space now is different than it used to be. Students do work in groups. They need different kinds of technologies nearby. I mean, it's very hard to find a comfortable place to curl up with a book in our library right now. So we really need to transform our spaces for people as well as provide the kind of climate controls that we need for our books.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's encouraging, actually. it's funny because I guess I do think back to, not all that long ago, when we were predicting the death of the book and the death of the library. And obviously the reports were exaggerated, because I don't think that either of those institutions are going to go away, either yours or the community library.
Oh,
as well.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, I thank you very much for giving some of your time.
It's been my pleasure.
I appreciate it. Paula Kaufman, our guest. She is the university librarian here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.